Hello again and welcome to another episode of Quick Question with Soren and Daniel, the podcast where two best friends and comedy writers answer all of life's questions with the glaring exception of who is this podcast for? I am one half of the show, bass player, bass catcher, boss haver, and podcaster, Daniel O'Brien, and I am joined, as always, by my co-host, who you might know better as Meaner's Badso, Mr. Soren Bowie. Soren, make me proud.
Hello, everybody. I am Soren Bowie, and yes, I am an extraordinary performer. I am a character actor. I'm an extraordinary writer, a comedic genius. But more important than all of that is, you know, that superficial stuff is that I was handsome once.
Wow.
No, I'm like now I'm more like a graying Joffrey with a neck that's sort of growing and a chin that's shrinking somehow, like inconceivable, like the bone sure. structure is changing. But I don't know. I feel like I deserve something for having been handsome, like a honorary discharge for my service to that community or something.
Yeah, so do you think, I'm trying to fast forward to when your kids are in their teens and 20s and, going through, I guess it won't be old photo albums, but, going through whatever we do to show the past in the future, if your kids are, are you going to feel good if your kid is, wow, you were handsome? Or is it going to be, is that when you're going to learn that you're not handsome anymore?
What do you mean I was? Tell me you wouldn't fuck me right now. Look at me. Watch me do some push-ups. No, I think I'd know by then. I mean, it's clear to me. I had this thought the other day while I was sitting in my car and caught my own reflection in my mirror and thought, it's never going to look better than it does today. Where I was for a long period of your life, you're growing towards your peak. And then after a certain point, death has its fingerprints on you. I'm graying. My hair's thinning. It's hard. My metabolism is slowing. I may be unhappy with parts of my body today, but then I just think to myself, well, this is going to be as good as it gets for the rest of your life today. It only goes downhill from here.
I think... one of the things that I think puts you at an advantage over me, one of the things, but you, because time comes for all of us and death comes for all of us. You met Colleen when you were young and handsome and fit and doing things, you would like trot and sniff the air.
A young buck.
Exactly that. As a single person now, I feel like I shouldn't be penalized, nor should anyone else who's out there in the dating world, if we put pictures of ourselves when we were a little bit younger in our dating profiles on our Tinders and our Hinges and whatnot. I don't think it's cheating or lying if one of my pictures is from a couple years ago when I was indoor rock climbing and I had muscles that are better than I have now, because if we end up together, we could just pretend that's our shared history.
Yeah, of course. I don't think there's any problem with that, especially given the current circumstances where no one's allowed to leave their house to do anything remotely active.
Yeah.
Where nobody's looking their best right now.
No, if I find love with someone, I think we should both be able to say but look at us when we were 22. Yeah. We didn't know each other, but this is our shared past somehow.
Yeah. Look, this existed. I mean, you can still see the remnants of it today.
One day we'll show it to our kids and they'll be like, man, how come you guys never have pictures of you two together at your peak?
Yeah, look.
Oh, don't worry about that. She was taking the picture.
I'm not going to go to Troy and be like, what the fuck? It's just a bunch of rubble here. I'm going to go to Troy and I'm going to be like, I know what once was here. That's so exciting to me. Thanks to Feels for supporting our show. Feels has me feeling my best every day and it can help you too. Become a member today by going to feels.com, that's feals.com/QQ, and you'll get 50% automatically taken off of your first order with free shipping. Boom.
Thank you, Audible, for supporting Quick Question. Visit audible.com/QQ or text QQ to 500-500 to start your free 30-day trial today. Let's get into the show where we ask each other questions and give each other answers. This is normally when we do a quick COVID update, but... my first question sort of extends from that COVID update. I have temporarily relocated for a few months. It's like not just a week's vacation or anything like that. I can work from home, and I have been so boxed in by the city that I rented a beach house in a quiet Jersey beach town. I'm immediately happier. Yeah. It's a 3-bedroom, 2-bathroom house with lots of room for me to run and play. And I get to go to the beach with my dog every morning and watch the sunrise. It's an amazing quality of life jump. And the question that I have for you is, because I know when you got your first house that you...
Hold on. Before you go any further, okay. I want to qualify that. I don't own multiple houses. I had a house, moved. I got a new
one. Sure. Yes. Starter house? No. Is that also bad?
I think you're not allowed to say that. Yeah.
Okay. So when you got a house, became like, once you had your first kid, I'm allowed to say first kid, yeah. Right? Okay, good. Once you had your first kid, starter kid,
yes,
rather.
The prototype.
You got to be a part of that community. Like you were with the other neighborhood families taking the kids on like trips to Disney or California, yeah. Adventure, the zoo. That's the one. And I was wondering if before that you did anything to be part of that community.
Oh, God.
Because I'm a very community-minded person. Like when I was in LA, there was volunteer opportunities to get to know other people. And there was like, I was part of like the biking community, because you can just go to meetings and like hang out with other people who ride bicycles and talk about how the streets aren't safe enough for bicycles and pretend you made real change. I don't really have any of that in Manhattan because it's a hellhole and I hate it. And now I'm in this wonderful, quiet beach town, and I so desperately, while I'm here, want to like be a townsperson.
Yeah.
I want to go to meetings and like be mad at the same things and be excited about the same things, and I don't know how to do it.
Yeah. Okay. What you're describing is the most try-hardiest part of my personality that I discovered when I bought mm-hmm. a new house, and like a part of me that I was like, well, I have to learn how to tone this down. Whenever I enter a new community, I want to fall into fast friendships with everybody there. And be part of the in jokes and like know what's going on in the community and like know that like, oh, in this community, like we laugh about the people who are scared of coyotes or like whatever the fuck it is. But mm-hmm. That's how, like, when I started at my job at American Dad, everything went so poorly. It was because I was like so quick to be like, no, I'm part of this, please. but yeah, I moved into my new house, and like it was our stated goal for moving in that we were going to ingratiate ourselves to this neighborhood as fast as we possibly could. Like, we're going to be mm-hmm. part of this community and like prove we are good neighbors, God damn it. And the first thing I did was, there was an old basketball hoop in front of my house, and there's like the road in front of my house when I moved in. And there was the backboard was all fucked up. The rim was bent, no net or anything. And I asked some of the kids in the neighborhood, is this yours? And none of them claimed ownership over it, but they would sometimes go out there and play on it. And, I was like, oh, I got it. So I bought the pieces that it needed to be redone. You can just buy individual mm-hmm. pieces. And once I had the serial number, it was easy to just like get a new backboard, get a hoop. And
I can't pass up an opportunity. This would have been for a hard right turn for your character. And it was like, so I asked the kids if it belonged to any of them. And they said no, but they played on it anyway. So I was like, I know what I'm going to do. And I called the cops, and those kids never came near that hoop again.
Well, and my first thought was, oh, I should trash it then. And I was like, well, wait a second. That is not, that's not a neighborly thing to do. And so I fixed it up, left it in front of my house and just fixed it up. And like some people in the neighborhood caught notice of that. And they're like, that's a very cool thing to do. And then we would go on just walks, tons and tons of walks. Even before I had my child, we would be out there in the streets so that we're actually like engaging with people and that they see our faces. And it was so important to me when I moved into my new neighborhood. And I would say that the ways to do that are, you're suggesting meetings, which, you know, that's forced interaction. That's a great way to do it if you can find them. I guess yeah. Next door would be where you'd find out where that shit's happening.
So here's the thing. I joined Nextdoor in Manhattan because I was curious about it. Yeah. And if I'm being totally honest, I thought I am looking forward to hearing from local lunatics.
Right.
And I was not disappointed. Like, Nextdoor is a great resource. There was a woman who posted on Nextdoor, and it was like, all caps, don't fall for this scam. I was driving on Amsterdam and 46th, and someone told me to pull my car over because they said there was smoke coming out of it, so I pulled my car over. Then they opened my hood and banged under the hood with pliers and then said, that'll be $280. It's a scam. Don't give them the money. And I and the rest of Manhattan was like, don't worry about it, lady. I think they got the one person who's going to fall for that scam. The rest of us were fine. We're not running the risk of having that issue.
Lurking on Nextdoor is one of my favorite pastimes.
It's wonderful. But when I relocated temporarily to this little ocean town, I thought, like, I want to, like, in earnest, be a good Nextdoor neighbor and see. I know there's, because of COVID, there's not going to be, like, town hall meetings, but I still wanted to, like, connect in whatever way I could. And here's some bullshit about Nextdoor, is that I just went on their website and was like, I'm relocating, I'm here now, and let me verify that. And they're like, okay, well, we can't verify it through your email or through your phone because it's the past somehow. And I was like, okay, that's fine. How do I prove that I'm here now for the next 3 months? And they said, we can only do it if we send you a telegram.
What?
I know. And I was like, Nextdoor, don't do that. Like, I just, like, take my word for it that I live here. And they're like, well, do you have a utilities bill? I'm like, no, I'm renting from someone. And I don't want to get them involved. Already, I feel very strange that I'm not going to go to, like, the person who owns this building and be like, hey, can you tell this website that I live here for 3 months? Or, like, they're gonna mail a telegram to the mailbox that you control. Like, the homeowner controls the mailbox, and it's locked, so I can't access it. I can just, like, if I'm getting a package, I could tell Amazon or whomever very specific instructions on where to leave it, and that's how I get my packages. But the mail, like, no one is sending me mail here, and I don't want to have to tell the homeowner, like, hey, I'm gonna need you to travel every day to see if this telegram shows up, and then give me the telegram, and so I can put in the verification code that's on the telegram into Nextdoor.com. God. Not going to do any of that. So I can't do Nextdoor out here.
A huge blind spot for Nextdoor that people aren't allowed to,
I know,
temporarily move. I mean, you've got snowbirds. You got people who, like, live in one place in one season, another place in another. And they're not allowed to use Nextdoor at both of them?
I know. And, like, Nextdoor, you're an app. You're going to run out of your target audience. It's increasingly not going to be homeowners.
Right.
It's going to be weird nomads who rent like me forever.
As you're talking, I'm also thinking, man, Nextdoor is not the place to go and make friends. Maybe this is the bad decision. I mean, you might hear about these events where you, like, people are going to come to talk about how they want to build a gate and everyone in the community gets a say in it. I'm not sure that those are the people you want to be affiliating with.
Sure.
It's tough in COVID. I think you have to just make your presence known by, like, being in the streets. You got to get out there, man. You got to get boots on the ground. You run. You're allowed to.
I run, and there's a local running club that I'm going to try to join. Like, I sneak my way in, because a lot of running clubs you have to pay for it, and I don't know if I'm going to pay a year club membership for 3 months of getting my ass handed to me by people who run all the time.
God, this is. You might have already. This might be in the back of your mind, but what you essentially have is when you were a kid and you went for summer break to, I don't know, Cape Cod. I don't know where real people go for summer. I guess the Jersey Shore. And, like,
Wildwood, New Jersey.
And suddenly you make the best friend of your life there, or you meet a girl there, and it's like, it's this real seminal summer for you. And are you trying to grab for that at all? Is that what this is?
No, I'm not trying to fall in love or anything like that. I'm genuinely, like after living in one of two large cities for as long as I have, I really like suburban neighborhood life. And, like, when I moved into this place, I brought, like, I set it up real nice for any guests that I have. I have, like, guest towels that I bought specifically for that. And I brought a bunch of my own pictures of my friends and families to hang out and, like, really nest here. I truly just want to cosplay being, like, a suburban guy for a while. Like, no one needs to know that I work for a a TV show and like a fancy job. I could just be a normal person who lives in a quiet town and lives a quiet life and like, I don't know, does like potlucks and stuff. It's all like very, like, I'm just obsessed with normcore life right now. It's just like, I just want to like get as many of the ingredients to being a dad as I possibly can. Except for a pretty crucial one.
You're going to have to fake a kid, Dan.
I know.
That's you. God, man, put some koi's out in the front yard and just like move them around every once in a while. And then whenever you're talking to people, you're like, ah, the kid. And then you just never reveal. No one ever sees the child.
Yeah, I'll get a bunch of stock photos of a kid and hang them up in the house and be like, oh, yeah, he's with his mother this weekend.
Honestly, it's a huge break for me. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's tough. She gets him weekends and days, and I get him nights, and that's when he sleeps. So that's why he's never around.
I tell you, I would move out of the city in a heartbeat if I wasn't. If I could just, you know, if my kid could just come with me, but I got to be close to him. It's hard in the city.
Yeah, it's tough. His school's in Hell's Kitchen, weirdly.
Me and a couple other parents are going in on it. Like, we started this little charter. Dan, I think that might be the solution. I don't know. Do you see people out in the streets ever, or is it too cold for that?
I do. I mean, it is cold, but I still do see that. And there are a couple other people who bring their dogs on the beach and they run around in the morning. But like, no one wants to talk at 6:30 in the morning.
Not yet.
With the dogs running around. And like, I see some people who get coffee at the same coffee place that I go to, and they're all friends. And I just, like me too. Like maybe if I just get coffee from that same place around the same time, eventually someone will say hi to me.
Yeah, you're on a shortened timeline here.
I know.
Because I think about it like at the gym. Like, you don't know anybody at your gym until you go every single day, and suddenly you're just friends with these people because of proximity.
Right.
Man, you may have to do that try-hardiest thing where you just go up to them and be like, hey, I see you guys here a lot. My name is Daniel. Nice to meet you.
Yeah. I wish I could bake, because baked goods is a thing that makes more sense to like give out. Like, no one walks around and I'm like, I made too much monogot. Will you have some? If I was a guy who like baked a bunch of like too many muffins, I'd be like, what am I going to do with all these muffins? Here, neighbor, take them. But I can't. I tried. I can't make muffins.
Okay. Baking's off the table. But do you have... mm-hmm. You don't have any fruit trees or anything there, right?
No.
Fuck. I don't even know what you can grow around that area, because you can also lie about it.
I know. And there's like... I'm hoping that we have such a mild winter that I can do some grilling, because then that's a thing. Like, there's a grill in the backyard, and I could just start grilling, and people can walk by and be like, hey, that guy sure is grilling a lot for one person and a dog.
I like that they...
Let's investigate that.
I presume it's for the dog as well.
Yeah.
He's having a party too. Okay.
Or I'm also... And this is, again, like, I'm... Fingers crossed for a lot of things to break my way. I'm going fishing Sunday, and I hope that I catch enough fish that I will then be seen cleaning them in the backyard of this home, like cleaning and filleting fish outside. Because then someone will have to talk to me, right? If I'm covered in blood and holding a knife.
I see no problem with this.
Surely people will walk by if for no other reason than to say, hey, buddy, can I stop you?
I do like that your plan for meeting people is to gut something in front of them.
Yeah, absolutely.
So a lot of exposure in that backyard, I guess, huh?
Yeah, yeah.
Is there an alley?
No. What do you mean? What if I'd said yes?
Behind the house. Like, is there like a communal space behind the house where that's like...
No, okay. No.
Gosh, you know, this is what I would do, and it's not the right choice, so don't do what I do.
Listen, the answer to beat is skin a fish in my backyard in 19-degree weather.
I would set up a conspicuous slack line. Because for anyone who doesn't know what a slack line is, it's a piece of climbing webbing that you fix between two solid points, and then you walk on it like a tightrope. It's a fun little activity. It's fun to try, especially if you're bad at it. and everybody will stop. Everybody wants to know what it is.
Absolutely.
Everybody wants to try it. Everybody's kid wants to get on it. Like, it's a very, it brings people in very quickly.
When did you bring that to my apartment? It wasn't Thanksgiving.
No,
was it?
It was the Super Bowl.
Super Bowl? Yeah. That's right. It was halftime and you set up a slack line halftime of the Super Bowl outside, and just some random person neither of us had met, obviously, walking by smoking weed, just sees us walking on this thing and was like, Can I do that? And we're like, yeah, absolutely you can. Absolutely, buddy.
There's an intimacy to it as well, because they, when they first try it, they can't do it. So you'll give them the opportunity. You just hold their hand while they walk it.
Yeah.
And so, like, already, just like that contact, there's a sunk cost investment in touching another human being where you're like, I guess I know this person now.
Right.
It's
and
crazy.
And because no one is good at it, like, even you're the best one I know at it, and you're not doing, like, flips, you're not doing tricks or anything. No. There's it's universal for a group of people to all be bad at a thing.
Yeah.
Like, just take turns failing at this and trying and laughing together. Like, oh, that is a good idea.
Also, people that see you doing it and see that you're, like, struggling with it, and but it's something that you're sticking to, there's, like, a real character to that, to picking something up that's useless but being like, I want to just get good at this thing. And then if they over time do see you getting better, oh man, they're gonna love you. That you're the hero of the story then, because you've got an arc.
That's better. So I don't have a slack line, but I do have, like, a camping hammock, but I can't do that. Like, I can't set up a hammock and wait for passersby and then be like, do you want to try the hammock? That's good. I'll hold your hand.
Dan, you're not.
I'll hold your hand when you do it.
A slack line is not cost prohibitive, my friend. They're pretty cheap. But I don't know. I think that would be my first instinct. I had a really similar dilemma when I went abroad for a semester.
Okay.
And went to a school I didn't know anybody, and I went the second semester, and it was like the first time in my life where I was coming into a place where everybody knew each other already. They had their groups, and I was just like, please somebody be my friend. And they were, you know, everybody's got their groups. They're like, nah, I mean, you're nice, but I'm not gonna make an effort to try and hang out with you.
Sure.
And how desperate I was to, like, try and make a friend. And so what I did was just joined every single group I could think of. So, like, the same way that you're thinking of the running club, like, you find out there are people playing, I don't know, it might be too cold for this, but, like, playing Ultimate on Saturdays, or you find out that there's a church group or whatever it is that, like, you want to get involved in that's specifically in that community, and then you sign up for all the shit.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. All right.
That's my...
You got some wheels moving.
Yeah. Honestly, I think maybe town council is the wrong way to go, though. That's the wrong crowd.
Yeah. 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 All right. There's a... On one of my walks, there's a, like, a yarn and fabric shop that always seems to be open. I'll just go in there and start, you know, grab some string and just start fucking twisting it up. See what happens. See if someone is like, hey, you should do that with us.
God, that's actually,
we have, like,
a really good idea.
A weekly craft group.
I think you should walk in there and be like, I'm going to be honest with you, I'm totally at a loss. I'm really looking at the idea of getting into knitting or, like, cross stitching or whatever the fuck it is, where you're like, I want to loom. And they're going to be like, we will help you. And it's old people too. Like, that's...
Yeah,
that
yeah.
That feels like your thing. Oh,
I know, man.
Slot right in. I think that's a good idea. All right. Well.
All right. Great. Problem solved. Then that's good.
We've done it. Hey, it's a tough time out there right now. Here in the beginning of 2021, do you experience stress, or do you have anxiety, or chronic pain, or do you have trouble sleeping? Hey, you're not alone. Many of us do. I mean, I have trouble sleeping sometimes. I get these headaches sometimes. Feels is a premium CBD delivered directly to your doorstep. And here's what it does. Feels naturally helps you reduce stress, anxiety, pain, and sleeplessness. It can actually help you go to sleep at night. And honestly, when you have an infant that you're constantly sitting up and waiting to hear, and you're thinking to yourself with every single noise in the house, oh, is she up? Is she up? CBD helps. Place a few drops of Feels under your tongue and feel the difference within minutes. The thing to remember with CBD is that finding your right dose is super important, and everyone's dose is different. So Leave room for experimentation over the course of a week or so, and you may need to take more or less to get the effects you're after. Feels works naturally and to help you feel better. There's no high, there's no hangover, there's no addiction. Feels has me feeling my best every day, and it can help you too. Join the Feels community to get Feels delivered to your door every month. You'll save money on every order, and you can pause or cancel at any time. Feels has us feeling our best every day, and it can help you too. Become a member today by going to feels.com/QQ, and you'll get 50% off your first order with free shipping. That's feals.com/QQ to become a member and get 50% automatically taken off of your first order with free shipping. feals.com/QQ. I have a question for you.
Go ahead.
What's a thing? So what's a thing?
Okay, shrimp.
Okay, so problem solved. That one's
baskets.
Answered.
Oh, that's okay. Good.
What's a book that you have never read but that you reference all the time as though you have read it?
Oh, there are a couple. I'm gonna out myself now for anyone whom I've done this to. I've used Infinite Jest somewhat derisively, and I don't even know what I mean when I use it. Like, I couldn't tell you, like honestly, bare bones couldn't tell you it's a novel or a series of essays or an autobiography. I know, I've narrowed it down. I know it's not a cookbook, and I know it's at the moment very popular to dunk on, but I don't know enough about it to,
it would be fair
to dunk on it with any accuracy. But like, I have very often, when I'm talking about a book I've read that I didn't love, or a book I've read that's very long, in both of those cases, I will qualify it with, I mean, it's not Infinite Jest, but it's not my favorite. It's not Infinite Jest, but you can get through it.
It's fair to call that book like a collection of footnotes. That's a fair thing, a fair assessment of that book.
Really?
Yeah, it's just tons and tons. Like, that's almost like the point of it, is that it's a bunch of footnotes.
Man. I mean, I never put too much thought into figuring out what it was, but I'm still way off.
That's a great one. That's a great one because you know, you're like, your finger's on the pulse as far as how culture feels about Infinite Jest right now.
Yeah.
And that's all that really matters.
Right. And just, and describing something else by saying it's not Infinite Jest usually leads to no follow-up questions. Someone is just like, got it. Because either they didn't read it, or they have a dim opinion of it, or they don't even need to have an opinion of it. Just like saying it's not Infinite Jest is enough of a descriptor for literally any book, except Infinite Jest, I guess.
Yeah.
And the other books that I haven't read that I talk about, because they're both books that I own, are Ronan Farrow's books, the War on Peace and Catch and Kill, : much longer title, and these are books that I know are important, and he's done a lot of great work for the Me Too movement. I am very supportive, which is why I own these books. They're also very long, and I do a thing which is sort of the opposite of Infinite Jest, where I reference it in a positive way, but still in a way that invites no further discussion. Like, I will, if someone is talking about Me Too, then I can say, have you read Catch and Kill? And if they say yes, I'm like, so good, right? What did you think? And then they get to go. And people love to talk, so I'm just giving you the gift of talking now, and all I have to do is nod until it's my turn to talk about something else. And if they say no, then I can say, oh, man, you gotta. It's totally relevant to what we're talking about. You'd love it. Let's go get some snacks in the kitchen. Yeah,
I will not, et cetera. I will not elaborate further.
I don't want to ruin it for you.
Yeah, you, that's just the key.
Yeah.
You're always allowed to say that, and that's your out. When they're like, ask you any more questions. Well, I don't want to ruin it for you.
And those books, especially because I could say, oh, I'll lend it to you. And then I give it to them. And then if they ever give it back to me, I could just take it and say, right? And then we're both gentlemen about it. We never have to talk about what was in the book.
That's a good one.
That just reminds me of this woman I met years and years ago who was just like dated very intensely for like a weekend, just like three wonderful days. And she gave me a book at the end of it. And she was like, read this book. And because she lived somewhere else, so she just went somewhere else and gave me the book. And I tried reading it, and it sucked. And then, like, months later, I'd finally worked with the courage to be like, I hated that stupid fucking hedgehog book that you got me. Why did you want me to read it? And she goes, oh, I don't know. I never read it. It was the book I brought on my vacation to L.A., and I wanted to give you something, so I gave you that. Is it not good? I'm like, no, it's bad.
Was it the literary adaptation of the Sonic the Hedgehog movie?
It was.
Yeah, it's not good.
Yeah. Even in the book, the teeth were wrong.
Yeah, something weird about the mouth. I can't explain it. God, I love it. I love it when people give you books that they themselves haven't read. But I guess there's no real way of ever knowing that, unless they really come clean. Now, you and I have given each other books before.
Oh, shit. No, I haven't read it yet. I'm sorry,
no,
man.
No, you... Hold on. There's been several. There's... Okay. I gave you Gates of Eden, which you did read, and you liked a lot. You gave me a book that I've forgotten the name of now, where there's like an assassin who goes on a mountain climbing trip and has to figure out who on the trip is a spy and kill him.
The Iger Sanction.
The Iger Sanction. It was great. It was like a real page-turner. Yeah. It was very fun. And you've also given me some Mike Sachs books. I still have one of them, by the way. Mm-hmm. I never gave back to you, which is Poking a Dead Frog.
Okay.
And then I also gave you London Fields.
That one I have not read.
That's fine.
It's in perfect condition in my home.
So you never even cracked it?
No.
That makes me feel better, actually, because London Fields is, as you know, my favorite book.
I know.
And so if you read it and read some of it and you're like, no, and just gave it up, I would be like, ah, now I got to reevaluate some things. Either the book or the friendship goes.
No, and I'm trying to remember why I didn't read it. It might be a boring reason, like I was reading something else at the time, or it might just be the pressure of like, because sometimes you used to send me, before we were as close as we are now, you would send me articles that you read online, and they weren't like comedy articles. They were just things you'd send me, and I'd be like, why did you do this? And you were like, you know, I was just thinking about it. It made me think. I'm this age, and this article made me think about the experience that I'm going through as a person this age, thinking these thoughts that I have, and I thought you'd be able to relate. And I just remember being like, oh no, I'm not either like intelligent or emotionally intelligent to respond to this in the way that he wants me to, because I just read it waiting for a punchline that didn't come. Yeah. So like, I'm worried that I would read London Fields, and at the end of it, I would walk away from it being like, yeah, those fields, man, oof, lush. Is that what you liked about it? The lushness?
You're lucky.
The fields?
You're lucky that is what I like about the book.
Oh, thank God.
I do remember. I'd send you like essays and things like that. And be like, I don't know, I just really like it. Do you want to talk about it? No. There's nothing funny in it.
Right. I'm sure it would just be like, yeah, man, I would absolutely love to talk about that. Hey, let's go to the kitchen and grab some snacks.
That was a lot to put on you, I'm realizing now. I don't know why I do that.
Because it was things that are like, how does a writer stay creative in modern times? Yeah. They were things like that, or like an essay that would make me confront the idea of my own mortality. And I would just read it and be like, yeah, man, that's Soren. He really feels things.
Those essays.
I'd better get out of here.
If anyone is curious about reading those, that's How Do We Write Now by Patricia Lockwood. And the other one I think is Sometimes They Don't Survive, I think was the name of it. And it was a New York Times article. And yes, it was very much like, I don't know. I think it comes from in school, reading stuff, and when I had nothing to do but think about the things I was reading for school, and I would just sit there and like really try and think things through all the way, and I would get really mad at people who didn't. Like when people would like look at something and they just sort of like they'd brush it off without giving it much thought at all, like a kid playing with a toy. I'm like, I don't get how it works. And so I would sit there and I would just think forever about stuff, and if there was stuff I hated about it, oh, that was even better, because I would sit there and be like, why do I hate it? Is that intentional? And honestly, that's what led to my career at Cracked. was
right.
was just doing that for so long. Just like that like mental masturbation of like, ah, oh, what do I like about this? What don't I like? Why don't I like it? Do you think the author meant me not to like it? And like, I thought, oh, other people must do this as well. And I was like trying to feed them.
I love that around the time that you were doing this, when we were both in like our mid early 20s in Los Angeles, and you're sending me these articles to get me to think and to get me to engage, my cultural equivalent to that was like, hey, Soren, come get drunk with me on a Sunday afternoon, and then let's watch Paranormal Activity in the daytime.
Oh, that was a good day.
It was fun. That's my speed.
That was great. We went and watched a horror movie. First, we went to our boss's house for a little bit, and then we watched a horror movie in the middle of the day.
Right. We didn't leave at the end of the party. It was just like, I don't want to be here anymore. Let's watch Paranormal Activity.
Yeah. Well, I have a lot of speeds, I think. I think you do probably, too.
Audible has plenty of content to entertain, inspire, and inform. It's easy to find just the right listen, whether it's comedy, romance, suspense, true crime, science fiction, or fitness and wellness. There is a listen for every moment and every mood, and so much to discover. With everything all in one place, Audible can truly become your playlist for life. And now, Audible is giving members even more with the all-new Plus Catalog! Audible is the leading provider of spoken word entertainment and audiobooks, ranging from bestsellers and new releases to celebrity memoirs, languages, business, motivation, and more, like original entertainment and now podcasts. Hey, that's what we are. All members have access to the growing Plus catalog with thousands of select originals, audiobooks, and podcasts, all included with membership. You can start exploring Audible now with a free 30-day trial at audible.com/QQ or text QQ to 500-500. Audible Plus members have full access to the Plus catalog, and you can listen all you want to thousands of included titles. To use your Audible membership, you'll need to download the free Audible app to any smartphone or tablet. And you can even listen across devices like Amazon Alexa-enabled devices without losing your spot. Soren and I both love Audible, and you can get great podcasts or books on there. You can get, they told me to pick a book at random. You can get How to Fight Presidents, written by Daniel O'Brien on Audible. It is narrated by the incomparable Richard McGonagall, who is, it's honestly one of my favorite things about this silly book that I wrote, is that they got Richard McGonagall, who narrated American Lion, the biography of Andrew Jackson, and a bunch of like Kennedy books. This very serious man who is like known in the audiobook narration field for the gravitas that he carries and brings to every book. He narrated my silly nonsense book where I made him say a bunch of curse words and stuff about presidents who pooped themselves to death. So check it out. How to Fight Presidents, narrated by Richard McGonagall. You could also check out Sherlock Holmes, narrated by Stephen Fry, which is super cool. And Soren, do you have any recommendations?
London Fields, my favorite book of all time. Don't know who's narrating it. If I had to guess, I would say Michael Caine. Sir Michael Caine.
Okay. Well, I don't think we're allowed to guess, but there are plenty of great titles you can listen to on Audible right now. You can listen to A Promised Land by Barack Obama. Heard of it? You could listen to all three of the Lord of the Rings books right now with Audible. Lord of the Rings, that thing that I just got into. You are going to love Audible. Visit audible.com/QQ or text QQ to 500-500 to start your free 30-day trial. That's 500-500. Text QQ to that number and start your free 30-day trial today.
The books that I have always claimed to read, well, one of them is actually technically a play, but I talk a lot about Hamlet. And I have never once read Hamlet. I have like a very basic understanding, not even, I wouldn't even say like Cliff Notes understanding of what actually happens in the story of Hamlet. But anytime that there's somebody who's like paralyzed by their indecision, or that they're like, they're vacillating about something, and it seems like it's like that just trying to decide is what's actually hurting them the most, I'm like, fucking Hamlet all the way. What are you doing, Hamlet? Can't make up your mind? Need a skull to think about it? Like, I reference it all the time. In fact, to the point where on my SAT 2s, did you have to take those? They're still around when you came.
No.
You came up.
I mean, there were, I feel like there were so many SATs, PSATs, yeah. GEPAs,
ooh.
ACTs.
Yeah.
I don't think SAT 2s were in my curriculum.
It was for us, it was you had to take the SATs and you took the SAT 2s, and the SAT 2s were more focused. You could choose what study you wanted to focus on your SAT 2s, and it would help you determine also when you went to college whether you could skip some prerequisites there. So like if you did math and you did Spanish and you did well enough on your SAT 2s, then you don't have to go through like Spanish 101.
Oh, okay.
And they also, the colleges look at it. They want to see how proficient you are at like the subjects that you seem to show a passion for.
Was that, did you also have AP classes in high school?
Not in my high school, no.
Okay.
Wasn't even.
I wonder if that was our substitute for SAT 2s.
Could have been. Yeah. Hmm. It was, when I took them, I took them in literature and I want to say science, but that can't possibly be right. And when I did it in literature, I wrote about Hamlet in that. And at the time I was like, oh man, like as soon as I started writing and like the pencil had already been committed to paper for a paragraph, I was like, I can't stop now. And so I just started writing about Hamlet and I was like, I don't know, man. And then got the responses back and did very, very well on my SAT 2s. And from that point on, I was invincible. I was like,
fantastic.
My understanding of Hamlet is bulletproof. I'm sure it was also just some TA somewhere reading it and being like, I don't get this. I'm sure it's fine.
Yeah, I didn't read it either.
And so I talk about Hamlet all the time. Like I feel I want to apologize for anyone listening to this that I know in my life who have like been like, you know what this sounds like? It sounds a lot like Hamlet because I've never read the shit.
I have read it. I studied Shakespeare because Rutgers, we were very lucky to have like one of the best Shakespeare professors alive. He's probably dead now. Rest in power, Professor Laveau, assuming that's your name and you're dead. And I really liked it. I also wanted to be someone who would occasionally quote Shakespeare.
Yeah.
But like not be an asshole about it. And my inspiration for that was
Seabiscuit?
It was a Nick Offerman interview on the short-lived Pete Holmes TBS talk show. And I can't remember if this episode ever aired or it was one of the test episodes, because there was like 10 test episodes before the show was actually picked up and went on television. And our friend Shelby Farrow wrote for it. So we got to go and like see a taping.
Yeah.
And Nick Offerman was the guest at this taping. And Pete Holmes was interviewing him, as you do, and mentioned something about how it was like, he described Offerman in this very like cool way, that he was a meeting of like the art side of things and also the, for lack of a better term, the manly side of things, like that he bridged these two worlds. And Offerman said, "A consummation devoutly to be wished." And I got fucking chills. And Pete Holmes goes, "Did you just make that up?" And he goes, "No, that's Hamlet. Consummation devoutly to be wished. Like, I wish that were, that I hope that is true of me. That's a union of things that I would like to be true of me." And I was like, "Consummation devoutly to be wished. Consummation devoutly to be wished. Consummation devoutly to be wished." Which is a quote that I love that I've quite obviously gotten no mileage of, because it relies on someone to describe me using two really cool things and then for me to be humble about it.
But in a really pretentious way.
Yeah. And so far it has not come up.
I've been your friend for a long time. I've never heard you say that. Oh man, that's a great one.
Yeah. There, and it, like I rewatched like Departed recently, and Leo says something and Martin Sheen goes, "Who said that?" And he goes, "Hawthorne." Oh, and I was like, yeah, it's cool to quote people, but when can I do it in a way that is like as cool as Leo in Departed or as cool as Nick Offerman? And I don't think I ever can. I don't think there's a single Shakespeare quote that I could pull off, yeah. But I really...
well.
I want to set myself up in a position where I could say something that works in a moment, feels kind of profound, and for someone else to say, "Who said that?" And for me to say, "Shakespeare." And for no one involved to feel like an asshole.
I'll tell you, I quote literature a lot. It never works. It's always like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, they know immediately that it's something that I've memorized. And then they know, like, they know that they can see the tracks of where you went in the memorization of it. That you, yeah. It wasn't just something that you read and you're like, ah, I like that. And it just stuck with you. It's something you read and you're like, fuck, I could use this. Right. I'm going to remember this.
And even though I know it always works in movies, I know it'll never work in real life. Like the Trial of the Chicago 7 is on Netflix right now, that Aaron Sorkin movie. And Sacha Baron Cohen's character, Abbie Hoffman, he's like a real life person. He says something while he's on the stand. And he says, you know who said that? And the lawyer makes a joke of it, is like, ah, your buddy over there? He's like, nah, no, it wasn't my buddy. It was Jesus Christ. Like, and it's in the movie, it's a powerful moment. The whole, like, the jury and the crowd is like, the guy that we thought was like a shitty liberal atheist person is quoting Jesus Christ. Oh my goodness. In real life, I you know, trial or no trial, you get your ass kicked. If you're like, you know who said that? Jesus Christ. Okay, buddy. Let's go talk about it outside right now. You fucking pretentious prick.
There's a moment in Seabiscuit, actually several moments in Seabiscuit, which is I don't know if everybody remembers this movie from like 2002 or something like that.
No, I don't know why I tried to get us off Seabiscuit when you brought it up earlier. It's, I know how you get when you have a reference that you want to talk about. It's a storm. What am I doing yelling at a storm? Just let it hit you, buddy.
I just had a similar moment to you where Tobey Maguire, who's the jockey in that, is like very charming with the press. And the way that he's charming is that he occasionally just casually like throws out some Shakespeare. And he's like, that's Shakespeare, boys. And they're all like, ah, and like they get horny for it. And in my life, I was like, yeah, if I just do some Shakespeare, my life would be different. And so like now I have whole poems by Shakespeare memorized, Daniel. That the only once did it like ever help me, and only helped me with one individual person, which was I was in another class where someone was like, a teacher was like, hey, will someone, like, does anyone just know a poem? Like, he wanted the first couple lines of a poem. And and no one was answering. And I was like, yeah, I got one. And so I just started saying it. And then he didn't stop me. And I went through the entire thing. And he was like, wow. Wow, you, like, that was pretty impressive. And then I look around the class and everyone is disgusted. And like these noses turned up, like, what the fuck do you think you're doing?
Yeah, they hate that guy. Because it's not, it's, we've talked about before, being good at anything requires a bunch of nerdy indoor practice for it.
Yeah.
And this is one of those things that is not as fun to show off the practice as juggling or any kind of athletic achievement, because no one thinks you just like, man, he knew that poem because he's just so smart, or some other second good quality. It's like, what did you do? Did you sit around memorizing that poem, hoping someone would ask you to recite a poem? How long did that take you?
And it was, yeah, you cannot hide the work that went into it. Yeah. And like the only way that it can look carefree and easy is if no one sees the work, but the work is evident immediately.
Right. You can't disguise that as like, oh yeah, I heard it sometime and I just like memorized it from the one time I heard that poem.
It was so,
it just
beautiful.
Stuck in my head.
It's stuck in my heart. That's every single word of it tattooed there. You can't get away with it. But anyway, yeah, Hamlet's one of those for me. And then the other one is, I think, probably one that's pretty common for most people, Moby Dick.
Oh, yeah.
But I consider myself pretty well read, and I know a lot about Moby Dick and like what's going on in the story and why it's a white whale and like the metaphors of that and just the sounds of it and how like ghostly words are and semantics. And then I'll talk about that. I'll talk about that for fucking days with somebody who's read Moby Dick and I've never read it.
That's surprising to me that you would fake that one, because I don't feel any shame having not read Moby Dick.
But there's real cachet to having read it, I think. Mm. And I shoot for the moon.
I suppose that's fair. I want to say you should read Hamlet, but yeah. But like, I don't really care if you do. I think that's just like a, I could feel my stupid soul, my strong substitute teacher energy peeking through and being like, there's some Shakespeare you'd really like, Soren, if you just sat down and like, I'll read London Fields if you read the following four Shakespeare plays.
All right, I'll read it. I'll read it. What the hell?
All right. I have another quick question for you, unless you want to talk about books more.
No, go ahead.
This one, it'll be real quick because we're running out of time. You might not have a good answer for it. I just want to take your temperature on it. And it's a rare opportunity where I actually do want feedback from our audience. That sounds mean.
Ooh, careful. Yeah, careful.
I mean, I don't want to sound like I don't want to hear from you. I mean, I don't. I just don't want to sound like that. I still want you to think I'm nice, but I also want like how I feel to be out in the world. But this is a time where I do want to hear from you because it's something that comes up in my world a lot, but doesn't come up in your world, Soren, is you'll be on a dating app. And if it's Hinge, for example, there's like four or five pictures and your bio is essentially like you choose like three simple questions and questions are things like ideal Sunday or ideal first date. We would get along if blank. You'll know I really like you if blank. You know, a bunch of questions like that people answer with short sentences. You pick three of them and that's the information that goes out there. And every once in a while, women on these apps will also include a link to their Instagram page. And I don't know what I'm supposed to do with that information. Like there's like, especially if it's someone that I see their pictures and I read their information and I'm like, oh, I think I would get along with this person. The only power that I have to do that I have in the moment is to like click like on them or comment, like comment on a picture or comment on their answer. And that's like the only shot I have normally on that app. But then there's the Instagram link and I don't know if I'm supposed to use that to further shoot my shot. It always seems weird. Like they're putting the Instagram account on their profile. It's not a thing that like that you have to unclick. You have to choose, no, this is a thing that I want out in the world. And you would think that that means that I am encouraged to like a photo or comment on something, but I don't do it because it feels super creepy. And I don't know. You understand why I'm confused by this.
I do. Is it just their way of being like, here's a very easy way for you to get to know me more is to see. I don't want you interacting with me there necessarily, but like here. I'm opening a door onto my life so you can see a little bit more about me. Oh, look, he's really into fishing. Oh, look, she's really into swords.
Maybe. It's almost never qualified with like, and here's the extended biography of me via Instagram. It's just like a link. Here's my Instagram. And I go on that and like, will sometimes feel tempted, especially if like, hey, I liked this person's profile and that's all I could do. But wait, no, there's this second avenue. I want to get their attention.
Yeah.
Because my profile didn't do it, but maybe if they see a stranger liking their photos, maybe that's gonna get them to reconsider. I don't know. I don't know if I'm just supposed to like passively enjoy it or if like you say, I'm supposed to use that to make a more informed decision by clicking on their profile and being like, oh, okay, we wouldn't work because she's got a bunch of pictures about how much she hates fishing or whatever.
So for my limited understanding of both dating and a website that I don't use, which is Instagram. Interacting with a stranger on Instagram, especially by like liking their stuff and then going into their DMs even, like that's definitely frowned upon, right? Like that's not something
I think
you
so
do.
Yeah,
then that can't be what it's for. I think it's just it's the easiest way to say I don't want to have to explain who I am and like try and succinctly put it into a couple of sentences, like here's a smattering, like here's a scatter plot of who I am, please just go look at that and see if you're still interested.
Okay,
I assume
That makes a lot of sense, and I don't know why I didn't think of that. I was thinking very much as like, use this for connection in some way, which was confusing to me.
No, I get it. They're putting it on in a dating website where they're like, hey.
Because like if I didn't put my Instagram or Twitter, which I don't, and someone reached out to me in one of those places and was like, hey, I saw you on a dating app. We didn't match, but I tracked down your Instagram. I think you should give me another look. That's fucked up. I hate that. I don't want to do that.
Right. Right.
But when you're volunteering that information, I don't know if the rules change. I'll just keep doing what I'm doing.
You know what I think you could do is if there's something very specific from their Instagram that they're like interested in that you were also interested in, where you're like, you see them on the summit of something and you're like, oh shit, I know that mountain, that's Capitol. I've been up there. Mm-hmm. And then you can like, then you've got your inroad. So the same way that I do with conversations that you watch me do, where I circle a conversation like a fucking shark, where I'm like, where are you from? And where did you go to school? Where did you, blah, blah, blah. Okay, here's the connection. Here's what we're doing. This is where we meet each other. Like, I know, I've been to that town as well. Here's why I spent a bunch of time there. Here's a crazy story from when I was there.
Right, someone mentions Machu Picchu and suddenly there's blood in the water and Soren's on it.
Yeah, I think that you're a rare combination of somebody who is assuming that a dating app is supposed to, they're like, you're actually doing it properly. Like you're trying to put yourself succinctly into that position and be like, look, this is who I am. Yeah, like everything's in the window in this store. Like you get to see it all. And then also just assuming other people would do that as well.
Yes.
It's hard to say what that tis. What tis that,
right.
Dan?
Right. And I also,
tis a consummation devious.
No. Oh, God damn it.
It's almost like a consummation devoutly to be wished or something.
Damn it. Well, we should probably wrap up the show. I like that joke, and I don't think we should keep talking about anything else. I'll track down the social accounts, but while I'm doing that, Soren, you have no choice but to be completely 100% unshakingly honest about this answer. You saw my rock and roll band with Cody, Brendan, and Abe Epperson. How were we? Were we any good?
Yeah, I loved you.
Really?
Guys. Yes. Dan performed at a show.
I thought I was going to trap you.
Oh, no, for our whole company. There have been a couple of bands who have gone through our company, and some of them I have been ruthlessly critiquing behind their backs. But yours, so it was at the Christmas party, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I had a fever that night and I didn't even want to go and went anyway because this was pre-COVID and I didn't care about infecting other people. And I was very curious how it was going to be. It was similar to like Jack Black playing in High Fidelity where I was like, oh, I like this person. Let's see how this goes. Because it's Cody too. It's Abe.
Yeah.
People that I genuinely like. And you have no choice but to be fairly earnest on stage. And I was like, this is going to be a thing I don't know it's something I want to see. And then when you guys performed, it was so good. And Cody's a great front man. You are a great backup. And like you're, as a bass player, you know your role. Like you know what you're supposed to be doing on the stage. And like you're grooving to the music. You're dancing around, but you're not showboating. Like you're hitting all the right, for lack of a better word, all the right notes.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys were awesome. It was really, really fun to watch. And everybody was feeling it.
Man, I was really, that's very kind of you to say. I was teeing you, I was not teeing you up for that. I really thought I was going to get a hilariously long pause and then like a, what do you want me to say, man? Like just because everyone, friends will always say that you're good. They want to say nice things, but I always secretly believed we were terrible. I think because, a mutual friend of ours saw us perform another time at a show that I don't think you were at. And I asked her after the show, I was like, what do you think? And she said, you guys are very serious.
What?
Which is like, that's a person who doesn't think that we were good, doesn't want to say that, and is looking to find what's one compliment that I can give. Okay, they were very serious. Like, I'm not gonna lie. I can't live with myself if I tell them that they were good. But I can say that, like, it's clear that you guys thought about this.
I think that that's what I'm saying with like the earnestness. Like but that's something you'd be expected from any band up on stage. That's not like a parody band. Like you're taking it seriously because this is polished work. Like you guys put time into this. And so you have no choice but to be earnest, as you're not playing a character when you're performing. And so it's just you. And that's a scary thing to do. And you guys were great. You played Twist and Shout, and it was awesome. It was like such a great song. It got everybody going in the crowd. It was wonderful.
Well, you could find Soren, who's just a sweetie, at Soren_LTD on Twitter. You could find me at DOB_INC. You can email the show, QQ with Soren and Daniel at gmail.com. That's probably the best place to tell us how women on dating apps use Instagram or whatever that question was. Find the show on Twitter at twitter.com/QQ_Soren and Dan. Gabe, do you want to give us an update on your website? Our engineer, our producer, our editor, Gabe?
Yeah, actually, I had a bunch of very nice emails from you guys, the listeners, which was really great to hear. And so I got some help getting my website back. So it is back. You can go to www.gabeharder.com at the time of this episode releasing, and there will be a website there.
Okay. There is definitely not now.
No, there's just a rocket taken off from an Earth clip art.
It says your website is ready to go. That's very exciting.
Oh, cool. Yeah. So it's up. I didn't realize that was already up.
I want to say excellent choices. Excellent choice for the tab to say name cheap parking page.
All right. Bye.
Bye.